So, I want you to just imagine pouring like months of your life into this one artillic
Oh,
masterpiece.
yeah, the kind of, obsessive, grueling labor.
Exactly. Where you just completely sacrifice your weekends, you're going out buying all those expensive professional grade materials.
Right, spending hours locked in a studio just obsessing over a single brushstroke on this massive canvas.
Yeah, you're trying to capture something profoundly human, right? Wrestling with the paint until it does exactly what you want it to do.
It's an all-consuming process. I mean, the sheer physical and mental toll of producing high-level visual art, it just completely takes over your daily routine.
Every single decision demands absolute focus. But then, and here's the crazy part, after pouring all of that blood, sweat, and creative energy into not just one, but a series of five massive pieces, you refuse to sell them.
Well, yeah, you just deliberately keep them out of galleries.
Right. You reject all commercial exposure. You literally hand over the finished products and make absolutely zero profit from months of your labor.
Which, I mean, that goes against basically every modern instinct we have.
Completely.
Our current culture is so hyper-wired to monetize every single ounce of our effort, let alone, a highly skilled, time-intensive craft like that.
And that is exactly what today's deep dive is about. We are digging into the technical notes and the personal reflections of this Colombian artist, Jairo Duque.
Yeah, specifically focusing on his 24 by 30 inch acrylic portrait.
Right, the portrait of A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And when Duque set out to paint Prabhupada, he wasn't just like painting a man.
No, not at all.
He was trying to capture the gravity of this leader who basically transplanted the entire ancient philosophy of the Hare Krishna movement, or ISKCON, right into the Western world.
And Duke somehow managed to paint that entire philosophy of life onto a single canvas, which is just incredible.
It really is. So we're going to look at this masterclass and how artistic technique can actually mirror spiritual conviction.
Yeah, because the choices Duke made with his brushstrokes, they actually offer this fascinating framework for redefining human identity today.
It's a direct challenge to modern materialism, and we'll see how the social impact of these teachings is, still rippling through our culture right now.
In ways we really rarely stop to analyze.
Exactly. So before we even look at the paint itself, I think the entry point to this whole philosophy sits right in the title Duke chose for the piece.
Right, the title.
It's called Trastio, like in all capital letters, Trastio Pintura Artistica. And I have to admit, when I first looked at the title, it completely threw me for a loop
I can imagine, yeah.
because in a lot of parts of Latin America, like in Mexico especially, if you hear the word trastis or trastier, the very first image that comes to mind is standing at the sink washing dirty dishes.
Right, doing the dishes.
Yeah. So I was looking at this incredibly serious, profound portrait of a global spiritual leader, and I'm just sitting there trying to figure out what dishwashing has to do with it.
Well, language is incredibly localized. That linguistic mix-up happens all the time.
For sure.
But if you look at Jairo Duque's background in Colombia, it completely shifts the paradigm. Because in South American Spanish, and particularly Colombian Spanish,
Yeah.
trasteo has absolutely nothing to do with the kitchen.
Okay, so what does it mean?
It translates to a physical move, like a relocation.
Oh, like packing your life into cardboard boxes.
Exactly. Leaving one physical dwelling and moving your entire existence into a new one.
Wow, okay.
That physical act of gathering your essence, stepping out of the architecture you've inhabited and transitioning to a new space, calling the painting Trastio is actually the absolute core of Prabhupada's central teaching.
Because the ISKCON philosophy argues that our spirit, our fundamental consciousness, is basically in a perpetual state of trastio.
Yes, we are just moving. The human body is essentially just a rental property.
A rental property. I love that analogy.
Right. It's a very temporary physical house that we lease for, what, a few decades.
Yeah.
The body is merely the architecture, but the soul is the actual inhabitant.
I mean, think about the weight of that concept for a second.
Heavy.
It is like waking up, looking in the mirror in the morning, and realizing that the re reflection staring back at you, the wrinkles, the asymmetrical features, the physical limitations, none of that is actually you.
It's just the house.
Yeah, it's just the drywall, the plumbing, the exterior paint of a house that you are eventually going to pack up and move out of.
Which is, it's simultaneously terrifying, but also this incredibly liberating way to redefine your own identity.
It really strips away all that anxiety we attach to our physical decline.
Exactly, because if you genuinely internalize that you are the inhabitant and not the house, your priorities just fundamentally shift.
But okay, this presents a massive conceptual hurdle if you're a visual
Oh,
artist.
absolutely.
Because art, by its very nature, is a material medium. You are using physical pigments on a literal physical canvas. So how do you paint the inhabitant without, like, glorifying the temporary house?
Yeah, you have to find a way to paint a soul in transit. And Duke actually documented that he used a reference photograph from 2018 for this.
From the ISK Con Library in California, right?
Right, in Culver City.
Yeah.
But what's fascinating is that he actively ran away from photographic precision.
He could have made it hyper-realistic.
He totally could have, but he deliberately chose not to. And you have to consider the historical context of when Prabhupada actually brought this philosophy to the West.
That was the 1960s.
Exactly. The West was experiencing this massive cultural explosion, sure, but it was also just accelerating into an era of brutal, unyielding materialism.
Oh, yeah, Mad Men era, mass consumption advertising.
Right. Prabhupada arrived in a society that was rapidly becoming obsessed with accumulating physical status symbols. So he was tasked with teaching spiritual detachment to a culture that was violently attaching itself to material goods.
So if Duke had painted a hyper-realistic portrait, you know, the kind where you marvel at the microscopic pores on the skin or the perfect reflection of light in the pupil.
He would have fallen straight into that exact materialist trap.
Wow. Yeah, because a hyper-realistic painting basically commands you to worship the material envelope.
It celebrates the illusion of the physical form. It's basically saying, hey, look at the flawless construction of this temporary house, which completely distracts you from the eternal inhabitant inside it.
It kind of reminds me of today's obsession with like Instagram and TikTok filters.
Oh, that's a great comparison.
Right, where we just erase all human imperfections to create this perfect plastic shell or even taxidermy.
Taxidermy. How so?
Well, taxidermy can look astonishingly real. Every feather is perfectly in place, the glass eyes catch the light, but it's entirely dead.
Ah, I see what you mean.
It's this obsession with preserving the physical shell long after the life has moved on. In Duke's approach, it feels more like capturing a slightly blurred live photograph of a bird in mid-flight.
Exactly. It lacks that microscopic static perfection, but it captures the vital energy, the actual spirit in motion.
So how did he actually do that on the canvas? Because that requires a very specific approach to the medium itself.
It does. Duke utilized a process he termed inner listening. So instead of smoothing out the textures of Prabhupada's skin to get this flawless finish, he wanted the visual weight of the brushstrokes to convey the raw reality of lived
He
experience.
wanted to look like paint.
Yes, he wanted the portrait to radiate this serene authority while still remaining deeply, uncomfortably human.
Which brings us to the actual chemistry of the painting, because all these philosophical intentions on a canvas, they just die without the right technical execution.
Very true.
And Duke's notes are super specific about his materials. He completely abandoned traditional oil paints for this project.
Right, he chose Liquitex acrylic paint instead.
Which, you know, for anyone who hasn't spent time in an art supply store, might just sound like a trivial little detail.
But it's huge. The choice of medium actually dictates the artist's psychological state. Think about traditional oil paint. It takes days, sometimes weeks, to fully cure and dry.
It lets you endlessly fiddle with it.
It is infinitely forgiving. With oil, you can blend a single shadow for 3 days. If you make a mistake, you just scrape it off, or you blend it into this smooth, imperceptible gradient.
Right.
And that slow drying time, it gives the artist the illusion of absolute control over the material world.
Oh, wow.
And that control breeds a deep attachment to the final perfected result. You become obsessed with hiding your own hand in the work.
But acrylic paint is the exact opposite.
Once you put a layer of acrylic on that canvas, you have minutes before it dries completely.
So the chemistry literally forces a philosophical surrender.
Yes. Acrylic demands quick, definitive, unapologetic decisions. There is no endless blending. Duke actually refers to his technique here as planar synthesis.
Okay, let's break that term down because planar synthesis sounds a bit academic.
Yeah, it does. So think of it like constructing a face out of distinct, flat, geometric shapes of color, rather than blending those colors into a smooth photographic gradient.
Like hard edges.
Exactly.
Yeah.
When you use planar synthesis, you force the viewer's brain to see the actual paint. You see the distinct planes of light and shadow, the abrupt transitions.
It stops your eye from being tricked into thinking it's looking at real skin.
Right. It forces a raw, honest brushstroke.
He also mentions in his notes this idea of an economy of resources, meaning he used the absolute minimum number of brushstrokes required to convey the face.
Which is incredibly hard to do.
But I think the most striking choice is what he left out entirely. He left the background completely empty. He refers to this empty space as visual silences.
Yeah, there's no elaborate temple painted behind the subject. No followers, no sweeping landscapes, no narrative decorations to give the viewer, like, easy context.
It perfectly mirrors an unplugged acoustic session in music.
Oh, I love that.
Think about it. When a band strips away the massive studio production, there's no synthesizers, no auto-tune, no massive backing tracks to hide a pitchy vocal. You are left with just a voice and an acoustic guitar.
Right. You hear the singer take a breath.
You hear their fingers scrape against the steel strings. By removing all the narrative background and refusing to, like, show off his technical ability to paint this complex scene, Duke is basically doing a spiritual unplugged session.
And doing an unplugged session in visual art requires a massive silencing of the artist's ego. Because the professional art world, it constantly pressures creators to demonstrate their technical superiority.
You want the critic to say, wow, look at the incredible perspective on that background architecture.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But by embracing visual silence, Duke proves he's removing his own ego from the transaction. He isn't trying to impress you with his cleverness. He is simply trying to transmit presence.
Well, getting your ego off the canvas is a beautiful, noble concept. But keeping your ego and your desire for compensation out of your bank account, that is where this philosophy clashes violently with reality.
It does, yeah.
Because the notes reveal that this piece, Trastio, alongside another massive labor-intensive work called Sri Pancha Tattva, was part of a five-piece series that Duke just gave away.
He donated them entirely as a gift.
Right. To Hridayananda Das Goswami, who is a direct disciple of Prabhupada, as a gesture of gratitude for the philosophy's impact on his family.
It was explicitly created as an offering. He completely bypassed the speculative art market. It was a way of honoring the philosophical lineage.
And just for context, Sri Pancha Tattva is a depiction of five divine incarnations, right?
Yes. So we are talking about a staggering amount of highly skilled labor multiplied across five massive canvases just handed over.
Okay, I have to push back on this a little bit on behalf of anyone listening who works for a living.
I'm not.
Because giving your art away as a pure act of spiritual detachment sounds incredibly poetic until the rent is due.
Right.
High-quality Liquitex acrylics cost real money. Mm-hmm. Crimed canvases cost money. The artist still has to buy groceries and keep the lights on in the studio.
They do.
So in a society that is structured entirely around monetizing our time, isn't this kind of extreme detachment a massive privilege?
Well, that friction you're talking about is exactly where spiritual philosophy collides with modern capitalism. We have been so deeply conditioned by a concept called absolute mercantilization.
Absolute mercantilization, meaning the idea that everything must be a market transaction.
Yes. It's this toxic assumption that every single skill you possess, every hour of your free time, and every passion project must carry a price tag.
Right.
Our culture tells us that your worth is fundamentally defined by what you can sell, and your value is determined by the market's willingness to buy it.
And I completely understand wanting to set a boundary against that pressure. I mean, it's the modern plague of the side hustle.
Oh, absolutely.
If you are good at baking, society demands you open a monetized bakery channel on YouTube. If you paint, you must have an Etsy shop.
Right. You can't just have a hobby.
Exactly. But setting a philosophical boundary doesn't buy groceries. So if Duke is dedicating months to these paintings, how is he surviving? Is this philosophy only accessible to people who already have a massive financial safety net?
No, because the ISK Khan philosophy doesn't demand ascetic poverty. Mm-hmm. It doesn't tell you to go live under a bridge and pretend money doesn't exist.
Okay.
You still participate in the economy to survive. You work a job, you pay your bills, you buy your groceries. But by donating these specific monumental pieces of art, Duke is basically drawing a line in the sand.
Interesting.
He is extracting the most profound portion of his talent from the commercial cycle, and he's placing it into a parallel economy of gratitude.
Oh, I see. So he is using his day job to fund his soul work rather than forcing his soul work to fund his day job.
Exactly. He is physically practicing the concept of transdio. He's practicing detachment from the financial fruits of his labor. He just refuses to let the market dictate the value of his spiritual expression.
It's a rebellion against the idea that the market owns every part of you. Just saying, I will participate in the economy to survive my time in this temporary physical house, but the inhabitant inside is not for sale.
And that takes an immense amount of discipline.
I bet.
But that boundary isn't just a quirky financial choice by one artist. It is the practical daily application of redefining human identity. When you shift your identity away from the material envelope, it radically alters how you interact with the rest of the world.
Let's actually trace that causal link for a second.
Yeah.
Because this abstract, almost Zen concept of our souls just passing through a physical rental property, it actually translates into some very strict, tangible, ethical rules in the ISKCON movement.
It really does.
Specifically, their trademark vegetarianism and their profound respect for animal life.
Right. The bridge between those two things is the mechanism of radical empathy.
Radical empathy.
Yeah. If you genuinely internalize the architecture of identity we've been discussing, that your consciousness is just leasing a human body for 80 years, you inevitably arrive at a pretty profound realization.
Which
that exact same type of consciousness could just as easily be leasing the body of a cow or a bird or a fish.
Oh, wow. So the inhabitant is the same. It's just occupying a differently shaped house.
Exactly. Which completely collapses the hierarchy of human supremacy.
Yeah, it would.
Modern society operates on this deeply ingrained belief that humans are the absolute apex owners of the planet, and that animals are merely economic resources or commodities or just biological machines designed for our consumption.
But if every living being is in a state of trastio, then harming an animal isn't just a dietary choice. You are harming a peer.
You are harming a fundamentally equal consciousness. Treating another soul as a mass-produced commodity becomes a massive philosophical contradiction.
So their vegetarianism isn't born from, like, modern weekend eco-activism or health trends.
No, not at all. It is a mandatory, non-negotiable consequence of how they define shared existence.
That makes total sense. And it scales up, too, because if that empathy applies to how we treat animals, it entirely explains Prabhupada's approach to global human conflict as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Because world peace can never be achieved just by signing treaties in Geneva.
Right. Political agreements and treaties, I mean, while they're necessary for immediate ceasefires, they're ultimately just band-aids.
Because they operate under the exact same rules of ego and material competition that caused the conflict to begin with.
Precisely.
Think about it. If I believe I am my physical body, and you believe you are your physical body, and we go to war over temporary material resources to comfort those bodies, a treaty just pauses the fighting.
The root disease remains entirely untreated.
Right. The delusion that we are our temporary houses. We will inevitably just find a new reason to fight.
True. Sustainable peace demands a root-level shift in how we define our shared identity. It requires humanity to recognize the shared essence of the inhabitants, rather than endlessly slaughtering each other over the temporary architectural differences of our physical shells.
It's a staggering thought. And the sheer scale of that idea brings us right back to the practical reality of our daily lives.
Yeah, let's bring it back home.
We are operating in a modern environment that actively monetizes our stress. We are relentlessly bombarded by notifications, emails, the demands of our digital egos.
It never stops.
Society constantly screams at us to build our personal brand, you know, to polish our material envelope and to just relentlessly accumulate more things to furnish a house we're eventually going to leave.
And a painting like Duke's Trestio functions as a crucial interrupt pattern in that environment.
An interrupt pattern. I like that.
Yeah, because it isn't attempting to force a religious conversion upon the viewer. It offers a practical compass. It demonstrates that setting boundaries against absolute mercantilization, practicing detachment, and embracing radical empathy, these aren't archaic concepts reserved for monks meditating in isolated caves.
Jairo Duke is a contemporary working artist dealing with the exact same modern pressures we all face.
Right.
And he found a tangible way to integrate this philosophy into his output. He do it by stripping away the noise, by letting the paint just be paint and letting the empty space speak.
He embraced the visual silence to reveal the true subject.
Which inspires a final challenge I want you to consider today. Duke had the technical courage to completely erase the narrative background of his canvas. He consciously removed all the superficial decorations, the complex landscapes, the noisy distractions, solely to reveal a true, honest presence.
It takes bravery to leave that much blank space.
It really does. So look at your own daily routine. What is the noisy, decorated narrative background in your life? What are the superficial attachments, the digital anxieties, and the endless commercial transactions that are currently distracting you from the inhabitant inside?
That is the real question.
Do you have the courage to pick up the brush, erase that background today, and just sit in the silence of your own true presence?
It really requires walking away from the elaborate, stressful masterpiece you thought you were supposed to be building in order to discover the one that actually matters.
And sometimes the most profound thing you can do with your most valuable work is to stop trying to sell it and just let it exist. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. See you next time.